The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Well, I'm joined now by Elizabeth Day, and our conversation about slow horses was interrupted by the commercials finishing.
It's very rude. Very rude of your listeners to interrupt us.
Yeah. I'm waiting to watch the last of Slow Horses because it's wonderful. You have a bone to pick.
I have a bone to pick with my husband because we started watching Slow Horses and I was into it, but he wasn't. And so he said, I don't think I can be bothered continuing. And then secretly, he carried on watching it behind my back and says it's absolutely brilliant.
So you're out of sync now.
We're totally out of sync.
Now, we are here to talk about your new book, which is called One of Us. Now, it's a companion, a sequel, really, to The Party. But you don't have to have read The Party to enjoy this.
Exactly that. I wanted to write it as a standalone because we've all got busy lives. And I didn't want you to feel that you had to read The Party for it to make sense. So you can read it completely independently. However, if you have read The Party, in the manner of Taylor Swift and her music videos, there are a lot of Easter eggs in there for
you. Yeah, it'll be more rewarding.
Yes.
If you've read The Party. Now, talk to me about your characters. I suppose the one I'm most taken by is Martin, who is very self-aware. Mm. He's an academic in a kind of a two-bit university, and he's in trouble.
Yes. Martin Gilmore is the quintessential outsider in many ways. I'm very compelled by outsiders in fiction because he had a difficult childhood, raised by a single mother. His father died before he was born. And then he got a scholarship to a private boarding school in England. And in many ways, that was the making and the destruction of him because he became obsessed with his wealthy, aristocratic best friend.
He wasn't able to handle the private school ethos. These other people were born to it.
Exactly. He hadn't been raised knowing the codes of behaviour. And so he still has that when we meet him in One of Us. He still has this yearning to belong and this belief that if only he could crack that code, he would be allowed into the world of the elites represented by Ben Fitzmaurice and his family.
And this is the key family in all of this. Now, when they were at school together, Ben had a nickname for him, which was unkind.
Yes, Ben. It was actually Ben's sister who coined the nickname Little Shadow because he was constantly traipsing around after Ben and after members of his family. But I think the thing about Martin that I relate to is this yearning to belong and to be loved. And so there's also a sweetness to him. And I hope that One of Us gives his character a redemptive arc. So it ends in a more optimistic way than it might begin. But One of Us is all about Martin, who thinks he's hellbent on revenge. He and Ben fell out in their 40s.
And we can explain, is that a spoiler to talk about why they fell out? Well, originally their friendship was solidified by a particular thing that Martin did.
Yes. So this will be a spoiler if you haven't read The Party. Well, I can talk in vague enough terms, but something happened at university between Ben and Martin, and Martin took the blame for it and was paid handsomely for that by the Fitzmaurice family. So he knows where all the secrets are buried. And now, in One of Us, Ben Fitzmaurice is on course to become the next British Prime Minister. And Martin wants to bring him down.
You remark, Ben is currently the Minister for
Energy,
who has never recycled a single thing in his entire life.
No, Ben is one of those classic Conservative MPs that we get a lot of in the UK, who thinks that they're very liberal. And because they get the moral high ground, because they believe they're liberal, they don't actually do anything that would be considered liberal or thinking of others. So he's never recycled, but he is Minister for Energy. And he doesn't realise his eldest daughter is an environmental activist either.
No. Oblivion Oil.
Yes.
I mean, it's art imitating life to a huge degree. Now, Martin himself, he's in trouble in college for a very modern offence.
Yes, he is. I was very interested. So as you mentioned, The Party was published in 2017. If we look back in the 8 years between then and now, so much has happened politically and culturally. We've had Brexit, we've had the pandemic, we've had the election of Trump. But one of the things that's happened culturally is the rise of cancel culture and what some people would term, quote unquote, wokery. And Martin is of the generation that would automatically dismiss this kind of wokery.
And yet,
he is someone who has struggled with his own sexual identity for many years and been in denial about it. And now he lives in a climate where he's encouraged to be open about all sorts of things, including gender fluidity and sexuality and sexual identity. And the opening chapter has this collision of those two tensions where he is called out by one of his students for using a phrase that he shouldn't use in one of his lectures.
Yeah, and we can say the phrase, I mean, because we are describing something that
yes.
occurred, Orientalism.
Exactly. So he describes a piece of art as being a proponent of the Orientalist school. And one of his students says, you can't say that. It's racist and you should do better.
And this is one of those smart-ass students who's, you know, he knows what he's at.
Yes, I think you and Martin would get on very well, Pat. It's making me laugh because I have a lot of fun writing in Martin's voice because a lot of the things that I might not dare to say as me, Elizabeth
Day. You can get Martin to say.
I can get Martin to say it. So he's incredibly annoyed by the student who's called Jacob Malik Edwards and he wears a baseball cap and he won't take it off during the lecture. And those kind of things really annoy Martin.
Now, Martin, because he's in this university where, you know, they have all these woke rules, he ends up going to sort of therapy, I suppose, is the
yes.
only word for it, to correct his attitudes.
Exactly. So the university authorities are very skittish. So they're like, OK, you need to go and have 12-week therapy course so that you can manage your anger issues and so that you have more culturally appropriate terminology by the end of it. So when we first meet Martin, he is very reluctantly sitting in front of a therapist who is trying to get to the bottom of him.
And the question that raises its head immediately, is she any good or is she just a yeah. walk-on figure? Because she's always inevitably cheerful.
Yes, Joanne Buster is her name. And again, I had a lot of fun writing her. I don't think she is a particularly good therapist, but she's a very nice woman. And occasionally she will ask Martin a question that gets into the depths. And as an author, it's an amazing device to be able to use because a therapist is hopefully prompting someone to think and reflect in a self-aware manner. And that's a great way of revealing character. But I did have to say, because I'm someone who goes to therapy, I go every fortnight, I had to tell my brilliant actual therapist, by the way, this is not based on you. If you're
any
going to
resemblance
read this
to characters living or dead, et cetera,
yes.
et cetera. Just an example. There were so many examples of your writing I wanted to pick out to give a sense of the sassiness of it. This is Martin talking. The students were the usual bunch of unimpressed freshers, meaty-faced gym boys and girls sporting velour tracksuits without irony. There were a couple of pale-faced, nervous-looking teenagers who wore their diligence like albatrosses around their necks. These were the ones who read the right books but never proffered an original thought.
Mm. Oh, he's very acerbic, Martin. What can I say?
This is the real you, isn't it?
It's interesting that because I think every single one of my characters is definitely an aspect of myself and some aspects are undiscovered. But I really enjoy fiction because a different kind of truth can come out. And in many ways, I can be braver.
Now, I want to talk to you about failure and philosophy. Mm-hmm. Tell me about your podcast.
So I have a podcast called How to Fail, which was quite a diversion from what I thought my career route was going to be. But I'm now so grateful for the diversion.
I mean, you got your journalistic chops in Northern Ireland.
I did. So I know you can't tell from the accent. I never picked it up. My dad is retired now, but he was a surgeon at Atna Galvin Hospital in Derry. We moved there when I was four. And I was so desperate to write. I always wanted to write. And Pat McCart of the Derry Journal gave me my first ever job at the age of 12, where I got to be a children's columnist. I wrote to every single local newspaper editor.
So your cut crystal accent was fully formed at the age of four.
Yes, it's weird, isn't it? And I think it's partly why I relate to Martin Gilmore, because I never fitted in at school in Ireland. But like Martin, I got a scholarship to a school in England when I was 13. And the first day I was immediately accepted, even though I hadn't grown up there. So I always felt like an outsider in my own life in a weird sort of way. And failure came from that. In my 30s, I had this decade of intense transition. I got married to the wrong person. I got divorced. I had failed IVF. Then a new relationship that I was in ended just before I turned 39. And I felt devastated and I felt like a failure. And I wanted to ask other people how they coped with that feeling. And that was the start of the podcast.
And then came books.
So you asked me about philosophy. So then I wrote a memoir come manifesto called How to Fail. And then after that, after 2 years of the podcast, which I only ever thought would last for about 8 episodes, I realised that certain recurring themes came up again and again. and that I was developing sort of 7 failure principles. And so I put that into a book. And so Failosophy is a handbook for when things go wrong, and it outlines those failure principles.
Are the 7 principles, are they remedies or...?
Yes, they are. They're ways of coping, really. And they have helped me personally. I feel very grateful that I get to ask all these clever people about how they survive failure.
Now, the question of your own personal failures, now you've had such incredible success.
Thank you.
You look back on that decade with kind of, what was I like?
That's such a good question. I look back at it actually with a kind of gratitude that it's in the rearview mirror and that it taught me so many meaningful things. I'm incredibly grateful that I'm not in those relationships that didn't work out. And I'm able to treat failure now more as data acquisition of what to do differently next time. And sometimes the only data we acquire is that we are strong enough to survive failure. But that's enough. And that's given me a lot of hope for the future.
You know that old line, whatever doesn't kill you makes you strong.
Exactly.
The question of interviewing people for your podcast, you learn more from people talking about their failures than even celebs who've got lots of success.
Definitely.
And lots of things under their belt. You learn more by talking to them about what didn't go right.
Definitely. And that was also why I wanted to start the podcast, because as a print journalist, I was so accustomed to going to interview these shimmering gods that we see on the red carpet about their successes, the film they wanted to promote, their best-selling novel. And actually, I realised that it's a shortcut to what makes us human is to talk about the things that went wrong. And I also hope that if you listen to the podcast, it makes you feel reassured that even those people that we look at and compare ourselves to often, who seem to have it all sorted.
Sometimes a feet of clay.
Exactly that.
The book is called One of Us, and it's an absolutely brilliant read.
Thank you, Pat. I
love the story, but I love the writing even more than the story. It's
what
absolutely
compliment.
Fabulous. You're going to be appearing at a sold-out event at the Dublin Book Festival tonight, I believe.
Tonight, with Roisin Ingle from the Irish Times, who I love and adore. It's going to be brilliant. I really, really love coming back to Ireland because we are a nation of storytellers, and I feel so welcome here.
Elizabeth, thank you very much for joining us. Elizabeth Day, the book is called One of Us, sequel to The Party, but you don't have to have read The Party to read this, but you'll probably go back to The Party having read this.
Let's hope so. Good for the sales.
Elizabeth, thank you very much. Now,
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.